going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The Chris and Amy Show on 104.1 FM KMOX and the free Odyssey app.
Anytime I can get back here, it's great. People are so wonderful to, you know, when they come back, they say hello. And, you know, at the airport, somebody greeted me. And I was walking down the street and somebody's birthday, guys, and they
pay attention.
Want to get my picture.
They really
pay attention.
They really do.
They don't know who I am in Cincinnati. But
you can get around pretty well.
But
over
the
there.
Fans here are great. It's just a fun place to come back to.
That's the voice of Walt Jocketty in a conversation with Mike Shannon. It's both those guys. We learned over the weekend of the passing of former general manager of the St. Louis Cardinals, architect of a World Series team, multiple division championships here, pennant-winning teams. And to talk about his life and to talk about his impact on Cardinals baseball, we are joined now by Hall of Famer and former manager of the team. It is Tony La Russa with us on KMOX. Tony, it's good to talk to you. How are you today?
Well, good morning. Looking forward to talking about Walt.
Yeah, and again, he passed away at the age of 74, and this is somebody who will always be remembered for his mark on Cardinals baseball and, of course, for bringing you into the organization. So, first, your thoughts on Walt Jocketty before we really get into the history and of what he accomplished here.
Well, I think it's not many people know enough about him, his beginning, but personally, he came into professional baseball in 1976 at the A's, the White Sox AAA franchise in Des Moines, Iowa. And coincidentally, I was a player coach there. So that's how I met Walt. My family met Walt, Sue, his wife. And I think part of explaining Walt is to talk about his background because it was so complete. So he saw the business side from 76 through 79. Then in 80, famous general manager of the White Sox, Roland Heeman, was asked by Charlie Finley that he needed somebody for the Oakland A's in the front office, and he recommended Walt. So Walt went to the A's in 1980, was there through 1993, when I was let go by the White Sox in 86, I went to the A's as a manager. So rejoined Walt, and Walt was part of player development, scouting, and he was there in the front office when the A's built that just amazing run of 3 World Series, which unfortunately just won one. So then he went to Colorado as assistant GM, and he finally comes to St. Louis. So my point is that he had a complete background to do the GM job.
Working with him,
with the A's versus working with him in St. Louis? How is that the same or different?
Well, the big difference is he was, you know, he worked on the staff doing stuff. The general manager was Sandy Alderson. So, you know, he did assignments and he was connected with scouting and player development. He also the roster construction and moves that you make. The difference was that in 1995, the Cardinals hired him as a general manager. And unfortunately, that was the replacement player beginning to spring training. And he had the great later to be realized how great the manager was Joe Torre. But Joe had a very, had a strong opinion that the game did not need the replacement players. And the Bush family was very upset about it, required that Walt fire Joe. So that's how he started his GM job in 96, and the spot was open, and we worked together. But the difference was that he was the leader of the organization. You know, once you get from ownership down, it comes down to the GM. And Walt put together just an outstanding group, not just in the front office, but in scouting development and in scouting and player development.
Visiting with Tony La Russa here on KMOX. And, yeah, one of the first things he does, I guess about a year later or so, he brings you in to the organization. He also responsible for the acquisitions of Mark McGwire and Jim Edmonds and players like that. I mean, he put together, the two of you together, put together some really good, very, very good Cardinals teams. That 04 team was as good as any team that's ever been assembled here in St. Louis. So how was he able to do that? How were the two of you able to put together such a great run of Cardinals baseball?
I want to make sure that he gets the credit because he was the leader of everything in that organization. You know, he was the guy on top. The fact that he brings in a major league staff, which myself, and by the way, we came from Oakland. We had three of our coaches with me and some of the players. But, you know, I think the best way for fans to understand is that he had the classic leadership style. And when, you know, I remember over the years, I'm trying to do my leadership thing. I've read a lot of books during the offseason. You know, one of my favorites was Good to Great. And it talks about the leader who has a strong ego about doing his job and knowing he can do it, but not being egotistical and making sure that everybody that worked for him was included, developed relationships, and got credit for what they did. And Walt was the classic person for that. You never saw him step forward and take any attention away from a player development guy who came up and was great, or a player who did a job, or a coach like a Dave Duncan, who was such a great pitching coach. So, you know, when you play for a leader like that, that is so qualified, but also is making sure that the people around him are getting credit, you know, you really develop a loyalty, and it's a very strong, you know, strong advantage when you go forward. And like I say, any of us working on the coaching staff and the players learn to really not just respect, but love Walt because of his style.
Yeah, and it did take a little bit of time, you know, once he became general manager and then hired you as the manager for this team to really be established as one of the best teams in baseball and go on that run. Do you remember a point where you knew that you guys had put together something that was really special?
Well, we knew, you know, in my first year, 96, we ended up winning the division, get within one of the World Series, because there were some really good young players there. You know, Brian Jordan, you know, Ray Langford, Royce Clayton, guys like that. And then we had a couple of good veterans, you know, Ozzie's last year. But, you know, as soon you could tell that we had some holes. We, you know, our bullpen was not strong. And, there, you know, there were pieces that had to come together. And he orchestrated, and this is, you know, when you talk about leadership and you talk about the success, you know, I think you need to show the tangible examples to really bring it to life. And you started to mention it. The deals that he made to put that roster together are legendary. And it started, in, you know, especially at the trading deadline in July, It started in 1997 when he brought Mark McGwire in and convinced him that, you know, he was going to play for the Angels as a free agent the next year. But Walt showed him that, hey, this is the spot you should be. Later on, he brought in Edgar Renteria as a shortstop. Then he really got hot during the winter of 99 because he brought in guys like Darryl Kyle, Mike Matheny in spring training, Jim Edmonds, David Veers. So what you saw was a complete roster being put together. But he had this one, an amazing record that he could point to. We were in contention from 2000 on. You know, it became a really nice, outstanding era going into, you know, into the 15, 16 and everything. And but we were in contention. So July, he made his mark by adding talent. You know, like 97 was McGwire, but then he brings in Will Clark when McGwire was hurt. And later on, he brings in Scott Rowland. He brings in Larry Walker. In 2002, our starting pitching was hurt, so he brought in Chuck Finley. And if you track it, which was incredible, of all the players he gave up to make those trades, I think there's only two or three played in the big league. So I think that the other piece that I want to add real quick is in the industry, you know, because of his time growing up as with the A's in Colorado, by the time he was a GM, he had earned a respect and trust, which he really solidified as a general manager, and that helped make him make those deals. He was really trusted by the people and the other guy, his peers. And to this day, you know, he left us in after the 07 season, went to Cincinnati and did his work to beat us a couple of times for a division championship. So just a great man, and I think we'll probably talk about it in a minute, but we were so fortunate as he was sick and, you know, going through those tough times in the hospital. The DeWitt family announced to him, which will be something that's going to be public soon, that Walt was going to be inducted into the Cardinal Hall of Fame in September. And that gave him a tremendous adrenaline lift that really improved the quality of his life in his last couple of months.
You were just bringing up all of the great players, franchise players that Walt Jocketty brought to the Cardinals. And one of those was that move in 2003-04 when he traded J.D. Drew, who was so talented but injury prone, and brought in the prospect Adam Wainwright. I mean, a move like that takes some guts.
Well, it just, you know, and it, I remember distinctly, not only, you know, he brought in Adam, but he also got Jason Marquis in that deal, and Ray King, that was a very effective left-hander. But I can remember at the winter meetings when he was trying to make that trade, you know, and rightfully so, J.D. was a real talent, and the Braves really wanted him. But, you know, talking to Bobby Cox, they figured that they needed the hitter, and they had enough pitching, and everybody was after Wainwright, and the Rays didn't want to let him go. But I think that the relationships, and I keep hitting on that, trying to explain Walt's effectiveness, the relationship that he had in the industry, the relationships he had throughout the organization, the way he talked with the staffs, and the players that came over. I mean, everybody, right now, if you talk to Scott Rowland, who came over here and then was with him in Cincinnati, I mean, everybody's going to say the same thing. He's a great person and a great baseball man, but bringing Wainwright over, look what that became. And, Albert was obviously at with scouting, and you give them the credit and the player development. But Walt was the leader.
Tony, is there something about Walt Jocketty that maybe Cardinals fans don't know that you would like for them to know?
Well, I think the most important thing about his leadership style was the best that you can have, and that is lead, know what you're doing, include everybody in the process. But he was such a good guy. I mean, he was quiet, never sought the attention, that at times you could think that maybe he was too nice. And Walt had a very important toughness to him. I mean, everybody still laughs that, we knew our job as a coaching staff, manager and coaching staff, which is we were included in evaluating what we needed, and if there was a conversation about possible talent to be included. But the final decision is the front office. You know, you don't, the manager and coaches, you don't say, you just play the people they give you. So there were a time or two that we disagreed. And I remember having one time where we were all together, and I actually challenged Walt that, you know, the staff knew more about this player than his scouts. And he jumped me right in front of everybody and said, look, you just do your job. Don't tell me about my scouts. So he had that toughness that was there along with this, all his other, you know, human qualities that made him so popular. But he was no pushover.
Well, we're looking forward to honoring him again in September. I know the Cardinals will and have already acknowledged his passing, but September 6th is the Hall of Fame induction ceremony, and Walt Jocketty will be a part of that. I'm hoping that we'll see you back in town for that. We are going to, yes?
Well, I'm going to actually have a chance to get this in there real quick, because in the next couple of weeks you'll hear more about it. We're going to do a nonprofit thing at the theaters, the Stiefel Theater, July 16th, which is the third day of the All-Star break. And we're gonna honor what happened in that 2000 time where guys came together and became a really effective, competitive playoff most every year. And a big important part of it is a well-deserved tribute to Daryl Kyle. But we're going to have a bunch of players there that are tell, you know, how well we did, honor Daryl, and then we'll honor Walt as well. There'll be some country music on the second half of that. We've got to, because our family, our new foundation, it's the Russo Rescue Foundation that's involved with rescuing dogs and cats and putting together people with a strong veteran presence. We have a partnership with PenFed Foundation, which is very strong on it. So you're gonna hear more about this event, where fans are really gonna enjoy the baseball side and the front half and music. But in the next couple of weeks, I'm sure we'll talk about it on KMOX later on. But it'll be something July 16th that I think will make the summer very, very special.
Sounds like a great time, Tony. And I also want to say, the Blues fans loved seeing you at the Blues game a couple nights ago. That place was loud. Everybody loved seeing you there. It was fun.
Well, believe me, I was there for a coach's clinic, and the folks at Victory Men's Health put that together. And so I just went to the game. It was coincidental. It was the same night. Totally unexpected. And I tell you, which has been a long career, that's probably the most overwhelmed I've ever been, you know, the response. You know, I know how great the fans are, but to get that kind of response just overwhelmed me. I was very appreciative. And I think I look back on it, it wasn't me so much. The Blues were having a great game, and they were kicking butt. I think the people were just excited.
I think it's a little of both.
You obviously brought a victory, so we need you at more Blues games now.
Yep.
Well, they had a good game yesterday, too. That's good.
They did.
Tony La Russa, it's great to talk to you. Thank you for giving us your time today. I know it's a sad day, and we're sorry about the loss of your friend, but thank you for being with us.
Well, I thank you for the opportunity to talk about Walt. Thanks.
That is Tony La Russa, former Cardinals manager, Hall of Famer, with us here on KMOX. And yeah, once again, there's the event July 16th. We'll learn more about that at Stiefel Theater when they make the official announcement. And then September 6th, Cardinals Hall of Fame induction, and Walt Jocketty will be a Cardinals Hall of Famer. It's Chris and Amy on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
MLB.tv is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! Woo! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
everything baseball all season long on MLB.tv. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Just had a conversation with Tony La Russa, and on the Odyssey app, you can go back and listen to it. But wait till the show is over at 12 o'clock before you do something like that. Or really, wait until after the Gas House Gang. That's on at 12 today. We'll talk about Walt Jocketty. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about the Cardinals weekend. We're going to talk about the Blues evening up the series. That's all coming up at noon. Tom Ackerman and me today.
Yeah. I mean, it is kind of amazing. You know how you know things in the back of your head, but you don't really stop and dwell on them or say it out loud. And when you look at the players that Walt Jocketty either drafted or acquired through trade, like Albert Pujols, Yadier Molina, we brought up Adam Wainwright, Jason Marquis, Mark McGwire, Chris Carpenter, David Eckstein, Jason Isringhausen, Jim Edmonds, Scott Rolen. Yeah. That's, I mean, that's the bread and butter of early 20th or 21st century Cardinals.
Yeah, man. Like, I mean, just going back and looking at their records from year to year.
That, yeah.
Starting in like, I mean, he's right. They won 88 games in 96. Yeah. I remember going to, I went to a playoff game. I think it was one of the Braves games, one of the games against them. And we thought they were going to win that series and go to a World Series. Obviously, that didn't happen. But once they got to like 2000, you know, they're winning 90 games every year.
This is why I'm spoiled. Well, was it 2003, 2004 where they won 100 games?
105 and then 100.
So this is why I'm spoiled. Cardinal baseball, because of my age at the time, mid-teens to early 20s, it was the home run race with Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. So it didn't matter that they weren't going to the playoffs because, like I said, it was a spectacle. It was so fun to watch that. And it went right from, I feel like, the late 90s. The Blues won the President's Cup, right, in 2001. They were insanely good. And then the Cardinals became that Cardinals team where they were winning 90, 95, 100 games in the early 2000s. And I, like I said, when you are in your teens and even into early 20s, you don't really have the cares and stresses of life. So sports looms so large. And to me, that's who the Cardinals are.
And I hope that this new era of Cardinals baseball, when Chaim Bloom takes over, and it's going to take a little bit of time there, but what the Cardinals used to be in terms of drafting and developing and making the right free agent acquisition or the right trade at the right time, their ability to do that for 15 years or so was as good, if not better, than everybody else in baseball. That part of the game has passed them by. And this is well documented. This is not something that we're just now telling you. They admitted to it during this past offseason and talking about what they want to accomplish next and wanting to make this a team that is strong structurally at the foundation, that they do have a good drafting and developing system. And they weren't at the forefront, not in 2024, not like they were in 2004. It's much different now than it used to be, and a lot of other teams have bypassed them. And I hope that we look back 5 years from now and go, yeah, they went down the right path, and now they're back successful doing what they used to do really, really well. When we come back, we're going to talk to Matt Pauley. He is the host of Sports Open Line and Cardinals pre- and post-game coverage. Pauley joins us next on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Koenig works out of the stretch with nobody on. The pitch is tapped toward third. That's played by Durbin, and he throws just in time to get Donovan. This ball game has come to an end. The Brewers got three in the first and four in the fourth inning on the way to a 7-1 win.
Yo, Pauley!
Pauley's a great name.
Yo, Pauley!
What'd you do for Pauley? Anything?
Me, Pauley! I was responsible!
Pauley, we're here because of you!
Yeah, the Cardinals dropped one yesterday, but they do take two of three from the visiting Milwaukee Brewers. The Blues evened up the series in the Stanley Cup playoffs against Winnipeg, so they go on the road for Game 5. Battle Hawks won, City tied. And a pretty good sports weekend here for St. Louis, and we are joined now by the host of Sports Open Line, Matt Pauly, and the host of Redbird Rush Hour, which happens at 5 o'clock when the Cardinals aren't playing. But tonight, 4:45 pregame show, as they will play the Reds in Cincinnati. Matt, that was a much better weekend as opposed to the previous weekend where everything sucked.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. Taking 2 out of 3 from the Brewers, you will take that. You would have loved to have finished off the sweep yesterday, but that's okay. And now they get to play 4 games in Cincinnati against a Reds team that's doing pretty good.
Yeah, the Reds are doing well, and I sort of wrote them off. And again, we're not even through April yet, so maybe I just don't give them enough credit for what I think they'll be for the full season. But right now, they're a second-place team. They're above 500. The Brewers have fallen to third. The Cardinals are in fourth. As you look at the way the division sits right now, how close do you think this is to reality?
I think pretty close, because I think they're all right next to each other, and I don't think there's a whole lot of difference between those four teams. I mean, you know, the Cubs on paper are the best team in the division. But that being said, when we're talking Cubs, Reds, Brewers, Cardinals, I just don't think there is a huge separation between any of these teams. So the fact that those four teams are separated by just 4.5 games, I would say that part of it is very close to what it's going to look like at the end of the year.
Well, I guess we're going to find out, and this will be a fascinating division if for no other reason than everybody is fairly evenly matched, I think, and fairly evenly flawed in the same sort of way. So we'll see how it goes. Tonight against the Reds, they are playing a team that has won 4 in a row, and they have been scoring a lot of runs. In fact, the Reds have the best run differential in the division right now. So why is Cincinnati playing so well?
The talent is finally just coming together. I mean, we've been talking about this team for years, about having maybe the best overall raw talent in the division. And I think we're finally starting to see that play out. Now, that being said, you look at the lineup, and it's not like this lineup is just, you know, it wows you. Ellie De La Cruz is obviously Ellie De La Cruz. But outside of that, you look up and down, and there's not like names just jumping off. I think the Francona factor does matter a little bit. I'm not a big believer that managers make a huge impact. But when you go from a guy who I don't think was especially good at the job to somebody who's a Hall of Fame type guy, that helps young players believe and the right decisions are being made. So having Francona in the room probably helps with it as well. I don't know. I'm not giving you much of an answer, because I think we're still all trying to figure out who they are and what it's going to look like. I don't think the Reds are going to win the division. I think they're probably the third or fourth place team in the division when all is said and done, but I don't think they're a bad baseball team.
Hey, Matt, Ronj and I were talking about the Cardinals' road woes earlier. They are really struggling on the road. Only the Rockies have a worst record. At this point in the game, is it fluky because it's so early and their record is so bad?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, not to pull out of Mike Claiborne, but let's talk about this on Flag Day, right? Like, it's just weird things like this happen. Sometimes there's a time where you can't win a first game of the series. Sometimes you can't win a last game of the series. Sometimes you can't win at home. Sometimes you can't win on the road. And everybody tries to look into it, and everybody tries to figure out what the reason is behind. I can't tell you, between my work here in St. Louis and also my work in Milwaukee, I can't tell you how many times a team has gone off to a tough start at home and has played better on the road, and fans start to come up with conspiracy theories about why a team doesn't play well at home. And it's just baseball. It's fluky. Like, they're 2-11 on the road. It's a terrible road record. I'm not trying to sugarcoat it whatsoever. It is a terrible, terrible, terrible road record. If they keep the 2-11 pace, and we're still talking about this in May or June, then not that it's not a legitimate question, Amy, but then like it's a question I think worth diving into. Right now, I just think it's the flukiness of baseball.
I mean, and I get it. but you do need to start winning some games on the road. Like, yeah. I get that it's the flukiness because the record's a little too bad. You can't be that poor of a team on the road and then pretty decent at home. So obviously the numbers are going to even out, but you do hope they do sooner rather than later because you don't want to put yourself in such a bad spot within the division because you can't win on the road.
Yeah, one of the things I've said about this team all along is that this is a team that cannot bury themselves, that they're probably not going to be built to build themselves out of a big hole. And they're 4.5 back right now. That's not a big deal. I'm not worried about 4.5 games back. I'm not overly worried about the record. But to your point, if they start playing more road games and they keep on a 2-11 pace on the road, then all of a sudden that deficit's going to get much bigger and it's going to be a lot tougher to find themselves in contention late.
Thomas Sajacy, supposed to be, I don't think it's happened yet, but sent back to AAA today. They're going to bring up Jose Barrero, who plays all the outfield positions. So I'm assuming this is because Sajacy, they don't want him to just sit, that they want him to play. Is that the reason?
Yeah. I would think so. He's still a young guy coming forward. Now, I wasn't actually as worried as some other people about Sajacy sitting because I think his role with this team moving forward is going to be somebody who's got to kind of come off the bench and play a bunch of different positions. He's not going to be that stereotypical everyday guy. So if they wanted to keep him on the roster, I wouldn't have had a problem with that. That being said, you got to play him a little bit more than they've been playing him recently. So probably makes sense to go ahead and get him back to Memphis and let him play regularly. And then Barrero, he can play everywhere. He can play outfield. He can play infield. He gives you protection at shortstop. I would have liked to have seen Barrero on the opening day roster over Michael Ciani, just so you weren't forced to be in this situation where you had to play Mason Wynn every single day. We know that Wynn has dealt with that back issue. I'm not 100% sure that back issue is 100% healed. I wouldn't be shocked. Knock on wood that this doesn't happen, but I wouldn't be shocked if maybe that thing flares up on him every once in a while during the course of the season. So to have now two guys on the roster and Brendan Donovan and Barrero who can play the shortstop spot, that's a big deal. And I think Donovan, when the season got started, I don't think the Cardinals were comfortable with anybody not named Mason Wynn playing shortstop. And then when they were forced to play Brendan Donovan there a little bit, I think they were pretty happy with what they saw. So it's probably a little bit of a different situation now where you don't have to feel like Wynn has to play every single day.
Matthew, how about those Blues?
Oh, my. Fun?
Isn't this so much fun?
That game yesterday, they're down and then they get the late goal at the end of the first period and then they come out in the second period and they just run all over Winnipeg and fans are chanting, "We want Connor." Like everything about it was Pat Maroon drinking Bud Lights and getting the fans going. I mean, come on. This is awesome. I love this so much. I don't know what's going to happen in this series. We know that Winnipeg's really, really good. They're one of the best teams in the NHL, but I'm having so much fun watching the Blues right now and the way that they're playing and the things that are happening. And and it seems like they're getting better every game. And I don't know if that's just there's a bunch of young guys on that roster who have never played in the postseason. So you get a little bit of experience there in the Stanley Cup playoffs and you kind of learn what it's about. And then, Montgomery, the press conference that Montgomery had the day before game three, one of his biggest key points was we have to do a better job in front of the other net. We've done a good job in front of our net. We got to do a better job right in front of the other net. Well, what happens? They start just, they've been dominating in front of the Winnipeg goalie during this period of these last two games. And I just have to think that when he says that to the team, and then it works in games, like that's a really good cause and effect for young guys who have never experienced the NHL playoffs.
Yeah, no, it is. So Jesse Granger does some good work in the NHL. I think he's with the Vegas Golden Knights, but he was breaking down the Winnipeg goals. And this year in the playoffs, 8 of the 16 goals scored against Winnipeg were either screened, tipped, or both in front of Hellebuck. So that's 50% of the goals. And you did notice that in the last couple of games that the Blues, it wasn't chaos in front of the net, but there was just enough. And here's where I'm a little bit torn, Matt, because obviously, neighbors tip was incredible, and that's a tough stop for Hellebuyck to make. If I think one of the pucks went off Pionk's like backside into the net, that's hard to stop. At the same time, Hellebuck's not getting lucky. He's not making any saves that are being redirected or tipped or when he has a screen. So some of this is, yes, the Blues are doing better in front of Hellebuyck, but I do think some of it is Hellebuyck is not himself with figuring out how to see through that screen.
Yeah, and they talked about that in postgame yesterday. Their coach is saying, you know, because at one point he got screened off by his own guy.
Yeah.
There was the I was watching the TNT broadcast yesterday, and they did their internet mission guys did a fantastic job breaking down what exactly happened and how the Winnipeg player was kind of lazy there for a moment defending his player, and then when the Blue came across in front of the goal, the Winnipeg player was late and came across, and when he came across, he's the dude that ends up screening out Hellebuyck. So yeah, is there some luck involved? Sure, there's some luck involved, but I think the big question for me too is like Hellebuck's obviously not as good on the road as he is at home, and he's obviously not as good in St. Louis. Does that stick with him? Like being pulled from a game in back-to-back games, does that stick with him going into game number five, or are they back at home in Winnipeg, so he's just able to kind of get the wind back in his sails and is just back to being one of the best goalies walking the face of the earth? And the answer to that question probably determines who wins game number five.
Yeah, and Matt, and I will say this quickly, that it could be unfairly a career-defining series for Hellebuyck in the same way that Clayton Kershaw was perhaps unfairly called like a choker in the playoffs, because the Cardinals in postseason baseball would blow up Clayton Kershaw every time. It was the weirdest thing, and that's what I think this feels like with Connor Hellebuyck being the Vezina Trophy favorite, playing so well, but getting blown up uncharacteristically here in St. Louis. Winnipeg's already, the city has the yips because the Jets have been knocked out of the playoffs, but this could really stick with Hellebuyck more than it should if he can't pull it together.
Yeah, look, I don't think it's unfair at all. If you are an athlete and you are really, really good in the regular season, and then for whatever reason it comes apart for you in the postseason, and that's part of your legacy, I think that's completely fair. As great of a quarterback as Jim Kelly was, his losses in the Super Bowl are a big part of his career. Same thing with Dan Marino, never winning a Super Bowl. Like, say that's part of who they are, and that's not to say that they're not great. That's not even to like be critical of them. It's just part of the story. Championships and playoff performances is what it's all about in sports, and if you're not playing at a high level during the playoffs, then that's going to be part of your story.
All right, Matt Pauly, any parting thoughts on the Missouri Tigers who were drafted? Armand Membu, he goes to the Jets. They also took Brady Cook. They signed him, an undrafted free agent. So Brady Cook goes to the Jets. The Bears get Luther Burden. They took him with the 39th overall pick. So you got a couple of Tigers in the NFL.
Yeah, I think Membu is going to be a really good NFL player. Same thing with. Are you excited about the Burden thing?
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that at all. But I think he'll end up being huge for them. I'm curious how they're going to distribute the ball, because they have a lot of people who will want the ball now. So I don't know how that's going to work, because they got themselves a tight end too, who's pretty good. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't wait for it to all fall apart horribly because it's the Bears, and to hear your weekly breakdowns.
All right. Well, that's enough of you.
Not that you're breaking down the game, that you are literally having a
breakdown. A mental breakdown?
Yes.
Matt, this is enough.
Yes.
Goodbye.
See ya.
Yo, Pauly, your sister's with me. I'll call you back later. See ya.
Matt Pauly, 4:45 for the pregame show this evening, afternoon. And then a late, is 5:40 late afternoon?
Yeah.
Well, it's 6 o'clock evening.
It's early evening.
Is
5
it?
5 is early evening. 4 is late afternoon.
Okay, so late afternoon pregame, because it's 4:45.
Yep.
It starts in the late afternoon and it ends in the evening,
yes.
Early evening. First pitch tonight, 5:40 from Cincinnati. You can hear the game on 104.1 FM and the free Odyssey app. It's Chris and Amy on KMOX.
Eye goes for a head, falls toward Watts. That's all she wrote. Clock will freeze at 98.01 after 90 total minutes of regular play and 10 total minutes of Enterprise stoppage time. This game ends in a 2-2 tie.
Well, because ties are un-American.
Well, that's your thing.
We have to counteract this tie.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Now you can get a delicious McRib sandwich with a large order of America's favorite fries and a medium Coke. Oh, beautiful.
Listen, I don't want to claim to know everything, much less anything, about soccer, but I really think if this sport is going to catch on in the United States, because everywhere else in the world is very popular, but if it's going to catch on in these United States of America, you need to get rid of all the ties, or draws as they call them. You can't have every game in a draw. That's like, well, at least both teams had fun.
Well, here's the thing. It's only us that keeps doing the draws.
We need more losers.
It's only City that loves to draw in the way that they're doing it. They're one of the worst at it.
At drawing?
Yeah.
That's not true. City has four draws.
They're not the worst. One of the worst.
No, but Houston has four draws. Colorado has four draws. Yeah. Minnesota has four draws. Everybody's drawing.
Well, but we still do it worse even going back to last year. Remember all the draws they had last year?
Oh my gosh, Toronto, that's not even in America.
Four is the highest.
And they also have four draws.
I don't mind it. I understand what you're saying.
I mind it.
I know you do. I don't mind it though. It's fine.
I like losing more than I like drawing.
Well, that's silly. That's just silly.
At least you know where you stand.
Yeah, you know where you stand. You're even with the team you just drew with. I don't even know if that's the right way. By the way, the end of the game yesterday was quite a bit of fun.
Okay.
That lasts like 15 minutes of time. Pretty fun. They blew it, and looks like they need some defensive help because they got a couple of guys back there. I don't know what the hell they're doing. But
Do they need a Secretary of Defense?
Well, yes. I do believe City's defense will get it together. Shouldn't he already have it together? He's the Secretary of Defense. Yeah, give him time to settle in. No! Be there now. What are we talking about?
Good stuff.
Hour three of the show. In fact, we'll talk about that and some other things with Chris Saliza. He is our political commentator. He joins us every Monday, and he is next on 104.1 FM KMOX.